Accession number 9574, Reel 1.
Mr. Robert Garlick, Reel 1. Could you tell me something about your background before the First World War, Mr. Garlick?
Well, I was out of work for a time after leaving school because you don't want me to go into all the details, do you?
Well, so where were you born, for a start?
I was born in Broomhill, Sheffield.
And what year?
That was 4th of June, 1899.
And what did your father do for a living?
Well, he was a cab driver.
And what, in the Sheffield district?
In Sheffield, yes.
A motorised or...?
No. That was before the motor cars came in, more or less.
And what sort of education did you have?
Just ordinary schooling, that's all, council school.
When did you leave school?
1913, I think it was.
And what sort of job were you thinking of going into?
Well, I was going in for a grocer, because I was an errand boy, and they found me a job somewhere else. And they found me a job somewhere else, and it was too far away for me to go, because I couldn't catch a bus, or I had to catch two buses or trams or whatever they were. And the finish, I went to work with my brother, who was a cap manufacturer, and I worked there until I joined the army.
So you worked there right through the first 3 years of the war. Can you remember what your feeling was as a young lad, about 14, when the war broke out? What did you think about the war?
Well, not really much, until 1917, when a brother came on leave. He'd been wounded, and then he was on his sick leave. I'd also a brother killed in that year, early 1917, latter end of 1916. And that what made me more or less join up, as when my brother went back to, to his unit, I know he was going back to France again. And therefore, I went straight with him. When he went back to catch the train, I went and joined up at the same time. That was in about April, round about April 1917.
Now, did you know any... Did he tell you about what conditions were like? Did you have any idea of what it was like on the Western Front in France and Belgium?
No, not at all. He didn't say anything about it, that he'd been wounded, and therefore he was going back again, and I sort of wanted to more or less avenge my brother's death, you see. So that's the reason I joined up, because I just felt like it.
Now, you joined up before you were conscripted then, you volunteered?
Oh, I volunteered, yes. I didn't get any paper. Well, I wasn't 18, and I wasn't taking them before 18, without the, just a few months younger, which was April, May, June. It was only about 2 months before I was 18, you see.
How did you they weren't taking you before 18. How did you manage to get in then? Did you give them a false age or what?
No, I told them that I was nearly 18, you see, which I was. There was only 2 months in it, you know, or roughly about 2 months. I mean, I'm not quite certain whether it was April or not.
Did they give you a medical examination?
Oh, yes, sir. Went through all that, you know, the coughing business and so on. But you're sent over there sort of thing, and we'll let you know. Then the others came in, and you're in, sort of thing. Then we were given a shilling, I think, something like that. And I don't remember whether we were allowed to go back home or not, or whether we went straight to from the recruiting office to the battalion, you see.
What did your mum, your parents think of you joining up like this?
Well, they were cut up about it, but they knew very well I should have to go when I was 18, you see. So, I mean, it was just another one going out of the army, you see. I'd tell you, two brothers. I had also a brother. He was working at Cameron Lairds at the time, and of course there was restricted war, you know, they were on making war tools and that sort of thing. But, well, I'm going on to another thing now, so it's no use. Well, my brother was wounded again at the same time as me, you see, but he was taken prisoner, you see.
Ah. So you had one brother in restricted operation, one brother had been killed early 1917, and your other brother had just been wounded and was just about to go back. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
What about your friends? Did any of them join up at the same time as you? Or
No. I went to the station with my brother and I went straight to the recruiting office.
Where was the recruiting office?
I think it was Surrey Street.
In Sheffield?
In Sheffield, yeah.
So after you can't remember whether you went back home, but where were you first sent to?
Now, I don't know whether we were sent. Don't remember whether we were sent straight to Rugeley or not. We were issued with the, you know, with the uniform and so on from there, or whether we. No, I don't remember whether we went to. Any place in Sheffield or not, so I take it for granted that we went straight to Rugeley, you see.
That's Rugeley in Staffordshire?
Yeah. Uh-huh. But all these people there, all the young soldiers there, they were all young soldiers, you know. There was no, more or less, they were all more or less teenagers, you know.
Now, the unit you joined, what was it called at this time? Because it wasn't actually a regimental battalion.
I don't know whether it was T... RB training boys training battalion or something like that, you see. But all we was issued with not a regimental cap badge, but just a button that was sewn, which sew it on the front of the cap, and that was right until we went to from Rugeley to Stallingtops, you see.
When you got to Rugeley, you got issued with uniform. Was that then normal khaki uniform?
Oh, yes, a khaki uniform, yeah.
And did you get full kit issued, or just...
Well, I think we got all the full kit, you know, the shoes, uniform, and whatever there was, the toothbrush, razor, leather brush, and all this sort of type, you know.
What do you remember, the conditions of service while we're at Rugeley, you know, how you lived there? What sort of accommodation did you have at Rugeley?
Oh, we were rolling huts there.
What were the huts like?
Nissen huts. Well, they were really spotless and clean. There were flowers growing outside the huts. And I really... Nothing to complain about as regards any rough treatment or anything of that description. I mean, admitted he's got to get up at 6 o'clock in the morning and be on parade more or less at 6 o'clock. And you'd have your normal duties to do, your PT. And
I'll ask you more about the training. What was the food like that you got?
I think it was pretty general anyway, because I don't remember what we had for breakfast or what we had for dinner, but we always had a hot meal while we were at Rugeley, that was us, of course.
So you weren't hungry?
No, not starving anyway.
Was there a canteen you used to use? Did they have a canteen so you could buy things?
Oh yes, did they call them the naffies in this in that war? I'm damned if I know whether it was this war or not. Oh, they weren't in this war, don't think that for a minute. I were a policeman then.
So, and you'd go there to supplement, so if you were hungry you could go along to...
Oh, you could, providing you got any money, you know.
Was shortage of money a problem?
Oh, it was definitely, yeah. Any barrack room damages and whatever there was, they used to stop it off your pay. I used to allow my mother 3 and 6 a week. We used to get a shilling a week, but I allowed my mother 3 and 6. So therefore it left me with 3 and 6. Then if there were 6 months stopped, or tenner, what you like to call it, stopped for burial room damages. You only got 3 bob, you see. But the amount that that you will give to your mother, or had it stopped for your mother, it was double for her, you see. She used to get another 3 and 6 on the top of that. That was 7 shillings a week. That were for me alone. That was for her alone, rather, sorry.
So it was topped up by the army?
Oh, yes, aye. Go on.
This shortage of money, did that mean that you how did it affect you?
Well, it did, if you smoked or anything of that, which the majority of soldiers did, you know, in those days. I mean, if it were only at, what was it, 6 pence a packet, or what was it, a penny for a packet of 5 wood binds or something like that. I mean, well, it affected you, because therefore if you smoked pretty heavy, well, your pocket money used to dwindle away. Then if you went into the naffy, you didn't get anything for nothing there, you know, you had to pay for it.
Did you drink at that time?
No, there used to be more or less a sergeant in each hut, or an NCO in each hut, you know, and they were fairly strict on that too, you know. Or if you were late coming in at night, if you were late, lights out or anything like that, you came in, you'd probably be for the company commander.
What sort of recreations did you have then? How did you amuse yourself?
Well,
mainly at Rudley.
But probably kicked a ball about or something like that, or, I mean, I don't think we bothered with women at all, because there were very few up there. Well, there were practically none up there. There might have been a couple in the cafe, the naffy or whatever it was.
But did you go to the village or town?
Oh yeah, we were out to go down to the village. After so long, you were confined to camp for so long, you know, before you were allowed out. I suppose that was to get your uniform straight and all that sort of thing. We know very well, if you sat to put a pair of putties on, you couldn't get them on, could you? Not to their liking, anyway.
Did you have any of the army games going about? Did you play housey-housey or bingo, as it's now called, or cards, gambling?
Oh, no, they used to play cards, pontoon and that sort of thing. If you played, it were only for halfpennies, you know, it wasn't... You didn't break a bank or anything of that description. I never remember housey-housey or any of that description.
Just common garden cards.
You used to make your own entertainment, more or less.
What about kit inspections? Did you have those?
Oh yes, pretty regular.
What were they like?
Well, everything had to be put down at the foot of the bed. Folded neatly, if you had any spare uniform or anything like that. And, you used to get carried on, particularly the sergeant in charge of that particular hut, you know. You had a place more or less for everything. So, but anyone with the head screwed on the right way, they used to put the things right, and if they were told about it in the first instance, they'd know very well not to do that particular thing again the next time there was a kit inspection.
While you were at Rudley, you hadn't been in the army long. How did you fit in with this sort of army lifestyle, the lack of privacy and the discipline, things like that, things that might have been new to you? How did you fit in with that?
Well, I think it were all right. I mean, you just fell into with everything. I mean, you knew very well there was other people there just like you. So, I mean, the whole thing about it is, if you played a football, you started kicking the ball about, you go, all others that come and muck in with you, you see.
How did you get on with your fellow young soldiers, you know, the other
regiment? Oh, you probably had one or two little fights and that sort of thing, but probably if you're playing at cards and you think someone's doing a bit of cheating, but apart from that, all more or less the all like a lot of brothers, you know. They didn't squabble very much. They didn't argue it on for a week or two, you know. They probably forget about it the next day.
So it's sort of friendly atmosphere.
Oh, well, yes, there's no doubt about that. I mean, you've got to live with these people.
What about your NCOs and the people who are instructing you? How did you get on with them?
Well, they were grandfathers as far as that goes. I mean, they used to tell you and use a bit of obscene language and that sort of thing. I mean, such as your bayonet fighting and so on. You want to growl and that sort of thing because that's what they expect from you.
Were they older men? People who've been or old regulars? What older men were they?
They weren't necessarily had been out in the front line or anything of that description. I mean, they were just NCOs, but there were other ones that had already been probably wounded and come out of hospital and then gone to these training battalions, you see.
There weren't any promoted from the young soldiers?
Oh, no, not at that particular time, anyway.
What about the officers? Did you see much of them at that time?
They were only on parade. But they were very strict. I mean, you're walking about the camp and if an officer came towards you, you'd wait and get about, when you got about 6 paces from him, you'd more or less salute and leave it at the salute until you'd gone past him and that sort of thing. You might have gone and so on, but that's by the way. But they were very strict on, particularly with the young soldiers, where they had to more or less obey the officers and that, and they were strict on that principle, you see, of being saluted.
Did you respect the officers, or did you see them as somebody not?
No. As far as I'm concerned, the officer was an officer, and it was drilled into you about this saluting business, and you're more or less, when you were on parade and that sort of thing, you had instructions what to do with saluting when you first joined the army.
Right, I'd like now to have a look at the actual training. You know, you did mainly while you're at Rugeley, but you can go on a little if it's easy to go. But what about your basic drill? How did they teach you that? What can you remember about that?
Well, it more or less comes natural to you. Rifle drill or anything of that description, they teach you how to use a rifle. It's all right. It teaches you how to use a rifle and so on. And strip it and put it together again. First of all, in the morning, you'd probably go to breakfast and have your breakfast, and then you'd be PT, you know, and so on. And you'd a routine for that particular day. Lunchtime was at 12 o'clock. You used to finish at lunchtime, you know, and I'd go and have your dinner, and then your parade back again, we'll say half past one, 2 o'clock. So, and you'd have a similar routine in the afternoon, but you'd have more or less the instructions on what to do and what not to do and so on. You'd have, they'd talk to you, you know, particularly when you were young.
How did they teach you rifle shooting and drill then? How did they go about it? Did you get much range firing?
Oh, yes, the range firing, you know, 800 yards, 600 yards and so on. We used to more or less share it with another, if a platoon was firing on the range, another platoon would be in the butch, you see. And then, have you ever been on the range? Anyway, they'd all of a board up like this, and you know when it's fired anyway, whether it's hit or a miss, and then you just put it down as a ball or a miss or whatever it was, you see. But it was, I mean, some took it in and some didn't.
How did you do?
Fairly well. I mean, when you've never fired a rifle before and you go on the range, I defy anybody not to feel that they have an emotion, you know, that the final income for the first time, and it really gets you down, you know. But as you go on and you get used to the rifle and the recoil on it, then you're quite at liberty to carry on from there.
What about rifle maintenance? Did they teach you how to?
Oh yes, I strip a rifle. The main thing was keeping the barrel clean, you know. Well, they used to have a 4x2, what they call a 4x2, and you'd have a small lead weight on it. You push it down the barrel, and you'd have a bit of cotton wool in a small loop, and pull it through. And that had got to shine, you know. There's not to be a particle of dust in it. Because I don't know whether you've done any rifle shooting or not, but you see that there's a bore inside the barrel. And as that bullet goes through the bore, it's turning, and by the time it leaves the barrel, it's the revolutions on it. I couldn't tell you how many revolutions it goes on. But it helps to take it through the air, you know, as well, with it being spiral.
What about bayonet drill? Now, you mentioned that they had you shouting. Could you tell us some more how they actually taught you the bayonet drill and bayonet fighting?
Well, you'd probably be stood in a group, you see, and they'd say, well, you on guard, you see, you pull your rifle up, your bayonet had already been fixed, or it wasn't fixed, you fix your bayonet, and so on. He says, what was it? I just forget the word of command, to tell you the truth. But you set off running, and there was sandbags fastened to top and below, and you go into this, and they growl when you stick your bayonet in, growl and let them know you're mad up or something like that, and then you'd withdraw it, and they go on to the next one. Probably you'd have a row of these dummies that's more or less stuck in the way. And
did they make you feel that bayonet fighting was an important part of your training?
Well, they told you that anyway. The instructor used to probably say, well, I'm probably being a bit severe with you. He says, but don't forget, when you get over there, it's your life against his, you see, against the enemy.
So you thought that you'd be using your bayonets when you got over there?
Oh, definitely, yeah.
What about route marches? Did you go on route marches?
Oh, my, I couldn't tell you how many miles we used to go. You'd march at ease and that sort of thing, and you'd be singing away there, and then all of a sudden you'd shout attention, and everybody would be swinging their arms then, and so on, particularly if they were coming to a town or a village or anywhere you're going through it, you know.
What sort of songs would you sing?
Ah, ha, ha, ha. Do you want me to tell you?
Yes.
Well, they used to sing it. Particularly these Cockneys, you know. I'll follow you like Dick Whittington's cat followed Whittington to London town, and that sort of thing. And, Mademoiselle from Armentières, and so on. I could give you a list of them anyway.
Do you remember any others?
I remember some dirty ones too.
Did you have any tactical exercises, you know, mock advances or exercises or war games of any sort?
Oh, we used to go on manoeuvres. That particularly at night time, you know. They'd probably pick one platoon against another platoon, and you'd go out and try to find them and that sort of thing. But there were no violence attached to them at all, you know. No.
Did they teach you artillery formation or extended orders and how to make advances? Were you taught all that sort of thing?
We knew very little about the artillery.
But artillery formation, you know, did they teach you that for infantry?
The formation, oh yes, but I think that was more for the platoon commanders than anything else. You see, they more or less used to. You get the orders from the higher ups, and then it comes down to you to carry out what he's told you. You see.
Did you get trained in the nitty-gritty of trench warfare? I'm thinking here about how to dig a trench, how to make a dugout, how to lay barbed wire. That's how to dig a communication trench. Were you taught
anything? I never remember anything of that description.
You don't think you did that at all?
No.
What about, did you have any special training in anything like signals or machine guns? Were you given?
Oh, yes, Lewis gun. I was number two on the Lewis gun.
When did you get that training? Was that when you were still at Rugeley?
No, I think that was at when we went to this place called Stolentoft.
Okay, we'll come to that then. I'll ask you about that then. Is there any other things that you can remember, any training you can remember in anything at Rugeley? Did you have gas training, for instance?
Yes, I think. Now I'm being a bit confused now because the with gas training while we're in the force, you know, and I don't remember it. I can remember going in the gas hut in the police force, but
that's in the police.
But I don't remember whether we had it. Because we must have done. Because we were issued with gas masks, you see. But I don't know anything about... I don't remember going in to any... I remember coming out of the gas chamber. And I used to have highly polished buttons, you know. And they were green. So whether it was the police force or whether it was the army, I don't know.
What did you think of your training as it was going on? Did you think this was the bee's knees, so to speak? Did you think it was good training and that you were going to be well fitted to face anything, or did you think it was a bit old fashioned, or what did you think anything about it at all?
Well, you got the training, you got your bayonet fighting, you got your bomb throwing and all this sort of thing. But you don't anticipate that you're going to use them, you know. You can't imagine being at home here where it's nice and quiet and then going over there and you start throwing bombs about and using your bayonet and so forth. It's your more or less when you get there you've got to decide for yourself what you're going to do.
How did you get on with the local civilians at Rugeley before you moved?
Didn't have much to do with them at all, except to going into shops and probably buying this and buying the other. But I don't think I ever went in a pub while I was there. So,
what was the broad atmosphere? Were they basically friendly, or did they?
As far as I know, they were very friendly.
Right, now you said you were posted to another training area. Where was that at? And can you remember roughly when? That's when you went to Stolentoft.
Do you mean before, after I left?
After you left
Rugeley. I don't know whether we went to Clipston for a short period or not. Clipston camp. And from there, whether we went from Rugeley straight to Stolentoft, or whether we. We couldn't have been at Clipston very long.
That's Stolentoft near Bury St Edmunds.
It's about 9 miles. It's all right through country lanes and everything. I always remember that particular night. It was midnight, I think, when we got out of the train. Practically all, whether it was company or battalion or not, I don't remember. But I know we set off up this lane and we were singing and shouting for a bit. And everything was quiet and people were shuffling their feet.